Okay, so here is the Earth. Round. Okay, I'm gonna come back in. Starting now.
Snyder.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Michael Feenan.
And I'm Aaron Hill.
You're listening to the Drunken UX Podcast. We're glad you could join us this evening as we get started talking about getting into web development, learning how to keep yourself sharp and what it takes to be a web developer in this day and age, and what comes into play and all those crazy mixed up things. To start off, I think you should probably go follow us on Twitter.
Definitely.
We are on Twitter, twitter.com/drunkenux. Also happen to be on Facebook. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm a little disappointed in y'all because I see the numbers of folks who are listening and I see the number of people who have liked our Facebook page, and those two numbers are pretty far apart. So if a few of you would like to go, you know, check us out on Facebook, by God, go do it. Facebook.com/drunkenux.
Don't forget, you can also check us out on our website, drunkenux.com, and you can join us on Slack, which you can sign up at drunkenux.com/slack.
Speaking of the website, if you enjoyed today's episode, whether you're a new web developer, an aspiring web developer, or if you're somebody who's been doing web development or design or UI, UX, or anything in that field for a while, we would love for you to stop by our website and drop some resources that you have found helpful in your career that you think other people should look at or read, book suggestions, conferences. Today's episode is going to be all about learning, so I want to make sure that people have the benefit of not just our suggestions. All of our listeners, stop by and leave what you have found helpful as well. If you tweet at us and share links or anything that you've found helpful, we'll also retweet and share those or post them on Facebook and all the things. So be sure to follow up and keep up with us on that stuff.
Definitely.
So to get started, I am drinking my scotch again.
This evening
I'm drinking Auchentoshan single malt scotch whiskey, American oak. Now, Auchentoshan is a lowland scotch. They have a few different bottlings. I actually really like their three wood, which is not a golf club. It is a type of scotch that is barreled and, or, you know, transitions between three barrels. But the American oak is nice. It's relatively light. Lowland scotches don't get a lot of love in the scotch world, so this one stands out as a nice, affordable, relatively fragrant, little vanilla-y kind of scotch. And if you don't like scotch, then I don't know what to tell you. You're probably not going to like this, but I enjoy it. I take it with a little bit of ice, little drop of ice in there. For this, it's appropriate. It opens it up a little bit. That the lowland scotches kind of have maybe I'd call it a musky kind of tightness to them, and the ice helps open that up a little bit. I could literally talk about scotch as long as I could talk about web development, so believe me, you'll get plenty of lessons in the coming shows.
I've got a White Russian that I made with Svedka vodka and Kahlua Especial.
It looks lovely.
It's delicious. Dangerously delicious.
It is if you put like a little flower on top of that drink and put it in some, inside a little, Matryoshka nesting doll, you know?
A White Russian inside of a White Russian inside of a White Russian.
Yeah.
Is that
not how drinking works?
I will say that I'm not being sponsored by Svedka at all, but Svedka is my favorite vodka because it is like a very clean vodka that's relatively inexpensive. You can get like a $7.50 for like $20 or something. And it doesn't have that weird rubbing alcohol feeling that Absolute does. But it's just, it's the only thing I'll buy anymore.
There was a really good episode of, I want to say it was Planet Money, that looked at the art, quote unquote, of vodka distilling.
Mm-hmm.
And the hosts actually went as far as to make their own vodka.
Oh, wow.
By buying alcohol from a drop shipper, like a wholesale alcohol dispensary. Mm-hmm. And they made vodka, basically. Hmm. And they went into like everything that goes into it, why vodka is, you know, popular, how premium vodka became like an industry.
Yeah.
You know, vodka being an alcohol that is supposed to taste like nothing.
Right.
How do you make that be premium? And it's totally off the reservation in terms of topics, but
yeah.
It is interesting. And if it's something that
we should put that in the show notes,
I'll throw a link in the show notes for it. That's a good call, and folks can go check that out. If not, yeah, it's easier than sending it to you in Slack. So I want to ask you a question, Aaron, because I was on Gizmodo the other day, and there was an article that caught my eye. And the title of this, the title alone was enough clickbait to get me into it. It says, YouTube Kids has videos on how reptilians rule the world. Moon landing was fake. Now, I don't have kids. I don't have kids. So the only time I watch YouTube Kids is never. But I know it is a thing, and I understand why. And I've got friends who have kids, and I know they enjoy watching, especially like Minecraft videos is the one that comes to mind. Like,
yep.
Hell, I don't even know who the people are they're watching. I just know when I go over to their house, they have Minecraft videos
yes,
on.
Yes, it is very popular.
So, you have kids, though, yes?
Yeah, yeah.
And do they watch YouTube or YouTube Kids?
They watch YouTube a lot. I don't know if they specifically use YouTube Kids.
Do they believe the moon landing is fake now?
Thankfully, no, because they're not idiots. But they, I've never seen the reptilian, the David Icke stuff come up on their channel, like on their feeds. Although they don't, like, I have the very basic YouTube content filtering. Like, it doesn't show things that have been flagged as like, not G-rated, basically. My daughter mostly watches slime videos and, listens to music, and there's a couple of girl vloggers that she really likes. And then my son watches almost exclusively Unspeakable Gaming, which is a Minecraft vlogger. And like, he will sit there and play Minecraft and watch a Unspeakable Gaming video concurrently, and he's totally happy with that. So
it makes me wonder about, you know, Google relies heavily on, you know, their content matching and algorithmic systems to identify stuff that should and shouldn't be in different areas, mm-hmm. whether it's kids or normal YouTube. Of course, they've been kind of going on a demonetization spree with folks. And here, just yesterday, day before yesterday, they announced that they're no longer going to allow, like, gun demonstrations or something like that.
Yeah.
And videos of that type. So, but I just wonder, especially with the kids side of it, it does seem like you can't win for losing, I guess, mm-hmm. right? I mean, on one hand, nobody wants YouTube to determine what is and isn't kid friendly, I think, or at least what is appropriate for their children, I would assume.
Right.
And while I think the reptilian overlords of the galaxy, I think we can all pretty much get on board with, you know, what if it was a global warming video?
Right.
Or something like that, and YouTube decided, you know, we aren't going to allow those anymore. That's right. Just a global conspiracy theory. I mean, they could. They could. It is, you know, it's their system. It's up to them. And so I don't know. I don't know if there's a takeaway from this. I just thought the story was funny.
There was an article that went up on Medium a couple months ago, I think, and it was like they on YouTube Kids they had like it was like Teletubbies and other kids shows, but people like took the videos and then did really weird shit with them, like not specific, not like pornographic or specifically violent, I think, but just really, really weird. Like the kind of stuff like, why are, like, I don't think I want my kids watching this. This is just uncomfortably bad.
Okay, so here's a quote from this article.
Mm-hmm.
According to a Saturday report in Business Insider, searching for the term UFO on YouTube Kids turned up a video purporting to show a UFO shooting at a chemtrail. The suggested follow-ups for that video featured a number of, Ike's clips, Icky's clips, including a nearly five-hour lecture on how aliens built the pyramids and secretly run the planet through a ruling class extraterrestrial human hybrids.
Yeah.
The video also delves into a number of other conspiracy theories, including claims Freemasons indulge in human sacrifice and President John F. Kennedy was assassinated by his own government.
Well,
I mean, whoa.
All interesting topics, to be sure. Not really, like, relevant or... I don't know that kids would even watch most of those, honestly. It doesn't seem like it would be particularly interesting to most kids. But regardless.
You know, the thing that, I guess, comes to mind, and the Gizmodo article kind of closes on this thought, is don't let YouTube babysit your kids.
Yeah.
Know
yeah.
what they're watching. Know what, you know... If you have them using YouTube Kids, you probably have parental controls on, you know, whether it's the, you know, the box on your TV, the tablet they're using, whatever the case may be. Put restrictions on it. And as a parent, go into the view history and see what they're watching and make sure you approve of it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't necessarily care if you want to teach your kids that reptilian aliens secretly control the world.
Right.
Okay. I guess just make sure that that's what your kids are watching.
Well, it's the same thing with, like, you know, having kids watch the color television or anything. Like, you know, it's, there's all kinds of different things showing up there. You should be aware of the content they're consuming.
Well, I think that's enough of that. I don't know how much more reptilian overlord talk I can take this evening. We're just starting recording, so I haven't had enough to drink yet. Give me a little bit and we'll get into those topics.
Like it's a four
to start though. Today, you know, we just wrapped up the two-part series on higher ed websites, and we both come from university backgrounds. My family has worked in education virtually forever. Learning, teaching, educating is something that kind of runs very close to us. And so
yeah.
to follow up on the last two episodes, we thought it would be a good idea to talk about how do you become us?
Yeah.
And I don't think that's to say that we are the end-all be-all, because I know for a fact that I am not. Aaron's no. pretty cool, but...
Step one, how do you become us? Get a beverage.
I think Aaron's got a side gig waiting for him, though, as the lead singer for a Smash Mouth cover band.
For those of you listening at home and keeping score, I have hair that resembles the singer of Smash Mouth.
The spiky, it's the spiky hair and the little goatee.
Yeah, yeah.
Grow a real beard, you slacker.
Can't. This is probably like 3 weeks of growth. Yeah, Feenan's beard is a... You should follow it on Twitter. I'll just say that.
It's fluffy. You've seen the episode of Family Guy where the birds are like living inside of yeah. Peter's giant beard. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's only a matter of time. at any rate, though, we know a lot about this. And the company I work for in particular, is its job is to help people like us get jobs.
That's
so Aquint, yeah.
Right.
And we've got Aquint, we've got our sister company, Vitamin Talent, and then we've got our international components, like Firebrand Talent out of Australia. That's what we do.
Firebrand Talent.
All over the world. Japan, France, London. We help people get jobs doing, whether it's web development, design, content writing, you know, all of this stuff. So this feels like a good time to kind of jump into this.
Sure.
And in particular, like, you look at what the job market's doing right now. There's an article over at DICE that was talking about this recently, that today there are over 250,000 unfilled jobs wow. in web and tech.
Is that nationally or, like, international?
That is the question I was not prepared to answer. So, yes. hold on. I might be able to tell you. This is information from Glassdoor,
it's probably nationally then.
Yeah. It just says that they reported they had 263,000. So that okay. probably is worldwide.
Okay.
I'm going to guess. Oh, no, it is United States. Here it is. Okay. Glassdoor made the determination based on its database of open jobs and salary data. The distribution of pay for open jobs today looks a lot like the overall income distribution of the United States.
Cool.
That's so great. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so the suggested openings are not much more polarized than the overall income distribution of the United States. So it looks like they're talking all about the U.S. here. That's a lot of jobs. There are, you know, there aren't a lot of industries outside of, you know, nursing, healthcare, and the service industry where you could virtually walk into a company and get a job if you have some skill set.
Yeah, this is kind of like what law was about 20, 30 years ago.
The unemployment right now, like in our field, is only 2.9%. It's like half the national average.
Nice.
So if this is what you want to do and it's something that you're willing to put in the effort to learn stuff, it's a great place to go in order to know that you have value and that you have longevity. And that's not to say it's easy and you're not going to walk in here and, you know, make $200,000 a year. That's not going to happen. God. But you're going to make more than McDonald's, you know, for certain.
You'll probably, when you start, you'll probably make $30,000 to $50,000, realistically speaking.
Yeah, but that's... Yeah. If you can walk into a job at 50 grand, that's a great starting salary.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, the whole millennials want everything handed to them bullshit that floats around that, you know, they think they're going to walk into an $80,000 a year job. I don't necessarily think that that's actually a thing people think, but, you know, 50,000 for a starting job, and that's pretty typical. Like in web development, you can get to 50 pretty easily. It depends on what you can do.
I wouldn't say you're going to start fresh out of practice, like as your first web development gig at 50, unless you're exceptionally good at it and you have good connections. But you could work up to that in just a couple years, I think.
And where you are matters a lot.
Yeah. Oh, obviously. Definitely. Yeah.
In where I'm at, here in Kansas, my first professional web development job paid, I think it was $32,000 a year, where I started. But within a couple years, I was up to 50. So, yeah. I mean, I literally ran that exact span. No, I think it was 30. I went from 36 to 52, if my memory is right. And that was in the span of about 2 years.
Yeah. If you bust your butt, and I mean, it's like any job. It's just, I guess the point we're making is that you can make a livable, like you can make a living on this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, real easily. And for the future, let's talk about that for just a second. TechLaunch had an outlook that was put out. There's an estimate of about 1 million jobs by 2020. So we've got about 250,000 now. They're estimating by 2020, so we're talking just a couple years here, there's going to be 1 million job shortfall because there aren't enough people going to school, getting, you know, the degrees that are being asked for, getting the education that's being asked for, to fill the jobs that are on the way. That's 27% growth in the industry between now and then.
Wow.
So, awesome. I mean, if you want an opportunity, this is why we care, because you've got a huge opportunity. You've got a chance to come in somewhere and get started in a place that needs you.
Yeah.
And it's a place that will take care of you if you are willing to put forth that effort.
Sure. I would say that it's definitely there are definitely opportunities. I don't think anything is going to be handed to you, but if you like, you could turn labor into success for sure.
It does. Yeah, this field does not reward laziness.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that's something everybody learns real quick, and I don't care if you're writing code, doing design, whatever the case may be. Like, you know. And we'll talk about this in a little bit, but this is a field that is still finding its footing, and it changes frequently, and you have to be nimble.
Yeah.
And you have to be willing to do things outside your comfort zone sometimes.
Yep.
You know, a lot of companies, when I say companies, I mean businesses. And when I say businesses, I mean small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
They will hire one web person, and that person will do everything for them, including, you know, hooking their printer up to their machine. Yeah,
you'll do help desk and database management and website management and DevOps and Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's a bad place to start.
No, that's pretty much was my first professional job.
So let's talk a little bit about where you learn this stuff at, right? As a quick history lesson, I started building websites about 20 years ago. And the only way at that point in time to learn how to build a website was to just learn how to build a website. Like, it was learning through brute force, basically.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have Google to fall back on. You couldn't just go and get answers to every little thing easily. There were only a few resources that were out there. You know, the web hosts were very limited in what you could accomplish. My first website was published on GeoCities. Television City Set 2052. Still remember the address.
My first website was a awful personal website on my internet service provider's, like, well, okay, so a long time ago, your ISP, you know, you would have your username that you would use to log in, and you'd basically get, like, the ISP's address, like, ISP.net/tilde, your username, and then you would get maybe, like, a megabyte of space. I'm not exaggerating either. It was literally, if you got, like, 3, that was awesome. This would have been, like, I think 95. But I don't know that, I mean, yes, I did HTML and, like, animated GIFs and everything, but, like, I don't think I started building websites for real until, like, the 2000s.
My first site was a Star Trek site.
I don't think I had even had a focus for mine.
I was a kid. I liked Star Trek. I wanted to make a Star Trek site, and so I did.
That's awesome.
It actually ran for about 4 years. And, you know, it changed over time, and I learned, and I did a lot. You know, it was a test bed for me as much as anything. I went from, how do I put this animated GIF on a page, to how do I use a JavaScript prompt to populate somebody's name onto the page?
Oh, yeah.
To how do I use an image map? And here's one for you. Do you remember VRML?
Vaguely, yeah. I had a book on it.
I had 3D VRML animations on the site. That's that you awesome. Could play with. And, you know, and this is what a lot of this comes back to, is you learn by just, you know, figuring stuff out. Now we do have resources. There are a number, of course, besides Google, like actual organized services. One is the Odin Project.
Okay,
Odin Project is super cool.
What is it?
So Odin Project is an open source, like, learning. I don't know what I would call it other than,
like, a curriculum,
a learning platform.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's not edX. It's not, you know, using any of them. It's like its own thing, but it's basically an open source platform that is maintained by volunteers. Okay. And they've got a whole curriculum of options that you can go in there and just start learning from the ground up. They've got a web development 101 course that is 36 lessons long.
Wow.
And when you get into it, the first thing they do is they start teaching you Git basics, front end basics, JavaScript basics. And they grow that over the course of all those lessons to thinking about back end work and development frameworks and getting into doing pair programming with people.
Cool.
So,
wow, that is really comprehensive.
It's extremely comprehensive and it's free.
Yeah.
Like, that's free, the killer part about it.
Free.
And in relation to this episode, one of the courses, sort of a course, I guess, that they have is getting hired.
Wow.
Where they walk you through what you need to know, what companies look for in skill sets, how to get yourself ready for it. So that's also a great jumping off point and segue, so to speak, between this
probably
and
should
that.
Have- put this last, because I think we could just end the show right here and just say, go do the odinproject.com.
Go do the Odin Project, yeah. that's I got to give a shout out to one of my coworkers who turned me on to this. I hadn't looked at the Odin Project before doing the research for this episode either, but definitely looks cool. I recommend it in the sense that it looks like it's hitting all the right notes.
Yeah,
and
that sounds great.
And worst case scenario, it isn't good, and you didn't waste anything but a little bit of time, because it's free.
Well, it sounds like it focuses on, learning the languages and everything else is really not, I mean, it's important, but it's not the main important thing. Like, learning the processes and, like, how to fit into the machine of shipping websites, like, that's what's important, because the languages you use are going to change constantly, so... That I think it's awesome they're teaching you both collaboration tools and like the other soft skills. It's really cool.
Yeah. A shameless plug, the company I work for, Aquent, we have a resource called The Gymnasium. Mm-hmm. And it's thegymnasium.com. It is also a totally free platform. All the material on it is available to everybody. And we've got a number of courses that you can take that. The topics are somewhat more varied, and so it kind of gives you a little bit more salt and pepper to what you're learning.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you want to get into jQuery, we've got courses on, you know, using jQuery, coding for designers.
Cool.
That was one of the very first ones we started with. UX fundamentals. That's one of the other big ones that we've got. I forget how many we have now. I think it's about a dozen with, we've got some shorter ones as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one that I would also recommend to folks. Also good if you're wanting to do this to get a job, because again, that's what we do, is we find people jobs. So
right.
If you start in using our learning platform and get these skills, I'm not trying to like hard sell anybody on this. I mean, I want people to
what company
be happy
makes
in
this? Aquent?
This is Aquent, yeah.
Aquent. Aquent.com?
Yeah.
Aquent.
Our system is built on top of edX, so if you've used any other learning management systems, you'll be relatively familiar once you get in and start using it. I mean, obviously, we've skinned it and done some other stuff with it, but yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm actually really proud to be working for a company that is that interested in teaching people how to be successful in the industry.
Awesome.
Can't say that a lot of places. there are a couple other, you know, like I'm thinking Code Academy, Learning Tree. These are good systems. I've used Code Academy before.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
The difference, I think, with these guys being now, their material is good. I don't think I've got any real complaints about it. And like Code Academy, I think they've got the neat sort of coding in the browser thing where it is validating what you're doing on the fly. And
yeah. The assessment. I like the curriculum. Like they share good content, and it's great as a surveys course. Granted, I haven't used it in like 5 years, but maybe it's improved since then.
Grow into it.
Yeah, since
they've got their free courses, but their free courses are there to sell you into their premium content,
right?
Which does cost money,
right?
And that's not a knock on the quality of what they have or your ability to learn stuff from it. It is something that costs money, as opposed to Odin Project or Gymnasium that are free. At least, right now,
don't go into Code Academy. I haven't tried Learning Tree, but I assume it's similar. But don't go into those thinking that when you finish the courses, you're going to be like employment ready. It's definitely good for getting quick exposure to a broad set of things and using it as kind of a launching point into more learning, for sure.
Yeah, the entry level stuff is very entry level. I think that's the thing that I've gotten from them. If you're not going to like a learning platform, then you're kind of going into like challenge platforms. Is that a fair?
Yeah. So, Code Wars and HackerRank, both.com are both sites that I have personally used and really enjoy. They're good for when you've had some exposure to languages, and both cover like literally dozens of languages. Code Wars is more kind of freeform exercise based. They give you like a challenge, and then you have to write a script in the browser IDE, and then it runs against some like tests. And then if your code passes the tests, then you get like thumbs up on the challenge and you get points, internet points. HackerRank is a little more curriculum oriented. Like it's a series of courses, like 10 or 15 examples within a thread, each building on the last. And then when you finish it, you get like the internet points there. Both are awesome and they're free. I highly recommend them for like boning up and Even if you're a seasoned programmer, like I did the Ruby stuff in Code Wars, and I've learned about, I had to go spelunking in the API a bunch, and I learned about some methods I didn't know about before. So,
and great it tool. May be worth pointing out too, like a lot of these resources are very focused on development.
Yeah.
As opposed to
these aren't design tools.
That's unfortunate, but I also, you know, it's much harder to automate the teaching process of design or UI UX type work. So I apologize to any of our listeners that are interested in more of the design side on this, because this particular part is a little bit more difficult to get into from that aspect.
Yeah.
There's one other one though. Exorcism.
Yes. That one is similar to Code Wars and Learning Tree. Or sorry, similar to Code Wars and Hacker Inc. Except instead of being something you do in your web browser, you do it in the console. So you grab like the daily or weekly challenge, and then you code the result, and then you push it up to them somehow. I think they give you a script to do it, and then it runs against their tests and tells you whether or not it passes. Those challenges are a bit... This is going to be something more for like a seasoned programmer who wants to like stay sharp. Like the one that I did one time had like a bioinformatics, like DNA sequencing, like analysis stuff. Like it was pretty legit. Code Wars and Hacker Inc. are a lot more like kind of all ages, so to speak.
And if it's not clear to folks too, there, you know, we said before, be prepared to think a little bit outside of your comfort zone once in a while.
Yeah.
Because this stuff does bleed in a lot of places.
Definitely.
You know, between, you know, what constitutes back-end development versus like systems programming, mm-hmm. or DevOps work and things like that. There can be a lot of overlap in these areas. What you're talking about with Exorcism actually reminds me a lot of something I caught Google with here recently. Mm-hmm. I was researching reCAPTCHA. We were doing some reCAPTCHA work to stop spam on one of our forums. Mm-hmm. Looking up some of the documentation on it. And as I'm running through the pages, a little icon pops up in the corner of this page that wasn't there. And it, you know, I forget what it looked like, but it was very eye-catching. Like, it stood out as something new. And so I clicked on it, and it took me to a FUBAR page, a Google FUBAR page. And it presented me with an opportunity to take part in an exercise.
Cool.
What? And it, like, opened up a web console, like it was a text console in a web page. I had no idea what it was, though, so I ignored it, but I went and Googled it later to see kind of what it was, and I found a couple references to it. And it turns out that this was their way of challenging people that they had identified via, you know, a certain profile of what they looked for and visited and all of this, to say,
whoa,
hey, let's see if you can do some really hard stuff, and then maybe down the road we can approach these people to offer them jobs because they're using, you know, these different skill sets.
Huh.
I thought it was interesting, to say the least, because it was definitely presented very much like a game. Like, just come play this. But it was absolutely an exercise designed to identify candidates who might, you know, come work for them.
Facebook did that. This was like 5 or 6 years ago. They had some, like, or no, it was longer than that. Maybe closer to 10 years. They had some challenges. You'd go on their website and you'd have to dig a little bit to find it, but then it was like different kinds of programming challenges. They start out really easy, but then the upper level ones, like the level 5 ones or whatever they were, are so Susie comes home every day and her cats like to hide in random rooms in her house. What's the most efficient path she could take to find all the cats? And it's basically a traveling salesman, but that and the other ones are all heavy algorithm based. So but yeah, like the I talked to the recruiter from Facebook, and she was like, go and do some of these challenges. So they definitely use that to vet people out.
The only other learning platform that I'll throw out there, and I'm just going to kind of throw this like a grenade and walk away from it, is Udacity. They do have a lot of content, and it's relatively good content. It's a mixture of free and paid. It also spans like a pretty wide gamut, but they do have a section that is specifically web development related as well. And so that's another one that people can go check out if they want and try out, you know, those the free level. And if you find it useful and want to pay for the premium courses, then by all means. I feel like, you know, when we talk about all of these platforms that you can go try, I kind of feel like there's no reason to spend money, though.
Yeah,
unless you just want that personal satisfaction. I mean,
yeah, I don't. Yeah, no, there's a lot of good free content out there.
There's so much free stuff out there, and whether that's even YouTube videos, if you're a visual learner, I'm not gonna give you any SoundCloud kind of links because you can't learn programming by listening to people.
Khan Academy has computer science stuff up there, and it's not bad. Like they do some sorting algorithms and other things. So if you want to get into some of that material, they've got the videos up, and it's good enough.
Stuff outside of like the learning platforms too, that if you're looking to learn, and depending on the type of person you are, certainly, you know, there are plenty of books that you can go out and pick up. I generally don't recommend like technology specific books. Like I'm not going to tell you that here's a really great book on, you know, JavaScript that you should definitely go check out.
Right.
Because those tend to get, you know, outdated really,
really fast.
I've got, oh no, I did get rid of it. I had an XML Bible sitting on my shelf for a long time.
I had that at one point.
And I finally got rid of it.
Was it the O'Reilly one?
I honestly can't remember. It was the huge one. Like it was the Bible one that I bought it and never opened it.
I was amazed that someone could write at that length about XML.
But some of the stuff that I've got sitting back here though, that I do recommend to people, like, you know, I've got both of Steve Krug's books, Don't Make Me Think and Rocket Surgery Made Easy. Like those are great concept books.
Those are must reads.
Absolutely.
Like, they're not long.
And yeah, they're super short. Yeah. Christina Halverson's book, Content Strategy for the Web.
Okay.
If you're more interested in the writing, you know, producing of material side of things, it's great. Jenny Reddish, Letting Go of the Words, is also in that, you know, purview. Because that process doesn't change, you know, and whether you're making text or video or you know, other kinds of mixed media, the principles very much stay the same.
I would recommend... I forget if we talked about this in a previous episode. We probably did, but Donald Norman's The Design of Everyday Things.
Yeah.
It has zero to do with the web. He does not mention... He might mention computers a couple times, but he doesn't talk about...
Wasn't that written in the 80s?
It might have been, yeah. But the stuff that he talks about in it, it's all about like the fundamentals of usability and user experience. And I gotta say, like the information in that book has provided itself to be so useful in my job as a web developer. It's a longer read than Krug, but it will open your eyes up in a way that I think you'll find fascinating.
I highly recommend 1988.
Wow. Stuff's still relevant.
Norman has, and actually it's funny that he comes up because while this is going to be another week and a half or whatever before this episode airs, the real-time overview episode that just aired, I mentioned Donald Norman in, oddly enough. And so I linked that, and I'll throw in this in these show notes too, a link to his stuff. He's written a ton of books. Like he's generally viewed as kind of the grandfather of user experience.
Yeah. He and Jacob Nielsen formed the Nielsen Norman group together, and Jacob Nielsen was like kind of the web UX guy, and then so they've joined forces and are unstoppable, I guess.
Never forget, if you are interested in web development, you can't just sit behind the computer and be successful. You're doing stuff for people. You know, you're building stuff for human beings who have to consume that content and use that website. So learning some of those fundamental skills, you don't have to become an expert at it, but learning the ways people think about things they use can be incredibly valuable.
Yeah. The one thing I would say regarding the curriculum-based things from earlier, this also applies for books. Keep in mind that web technology generally moves really fast, and stuff that was relevant even 3 or 4 years ago may not be relevant anymore. And I've seen a lot of college classes where they're teaching... I saw one that was teaching table-based layouts in, like, the late 2000s... Wait, like, almost 2010. It's like 2007 or something. You're still teaching table-based layouts, and like,
well, when we talking about books in particular, it makes me think of things like Wasp Interact.
Yeah, yeah.
That came out. Christopher Schmidt had a hand in that, and a bunch of other folks who I don't remember because I don't know them, but I've met Chris. Wasp Interact was incredible. Mm-hmm. But they put that book out in, what was it, 2014, I think?
Yeah.
No, it was before that. It has to have been. Let me, here, I've got Amazon open. I'll check here. But the Wasp Interact book was fantastic because it also, you know, like we were talking about the Odin, Odin project and how it's like this open source learning material. And that's very much what Wasp was designed to be about.
Right.
Then they put out this book. And that was it.
Yeah.
And that's no good. You know, that's as a living document, that doesn't work to just kind of put it out there and then not go anywhere with it.
I started working on Ruby on Rails in Rails 2. It's like 7-8 years ago. And it's now up to like Rails 5. So the books that were relevant for Rails 2 are, most of them are no longer relevant. Like, things have changed so much that the books are just no good anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, we say, focus on the strategy books. Yes. Focus on the things that help you know how to think about the web. And use that as your leverage against how quickly it moves.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's books, all you can do.
The books, speaking of Rails and Ruby, The Well-Grounded Rubyist, that came out, I think, originally in one of the late Ruby versions from version 1, like 1.8 or 1.9. The stuff in that hasn't changed much. You can still work with that. And Sandy Metz has a book about object-oriented programming with Ruby that is awesome and is still very relevant now. So, like, but those both focus on, like, concepts rather than specific applications.
Also, you know, the thing about books and how quickly stuff changed, there are maybe two other books that are worth name dropping. Mm-hmm. Smashing Magazine has their book, The Smashing Book.
Okay.
That they've got like 3 or 4 versions of that out now, and they've been pretty good about refreshing every couple years and releasing a new bundle.
Yeah.
The challenge being, if you want to keep up, you are kind of then stuck buying that next one and learning the new material. But
yeah,
they are putting forth that effort. And A List Apart has their A Book Apart series.
I used to read them a lot when I was first starting.
Yeah. They've been compiling a lot of those bigger topics into like the little short booklets that you can get. And they're usually pretty good.
Yeah.
But I've got one of the A Book Apart on my shelf and it just sits there now. I guess that's the thing. Books sit. What I would really encourage folks to do is, rather than books, you know, latch on to the doers in the field. Like Chris Coyer comes to mind. He's a guy that is writing all the time, doing examples of how, you know, how to write different types of CSS for different things and whatnot. He produced CodePen, which is a great development tool and resource to learn how to use.
That's CodePen.io, right?
.io, yeah.
Okay.
And he's somebody that you can follow and get this sort of nice little drip of content relatively frequently that you don't have to keep on a shelf then, that you can learn from. And there are, you know, pick your specialty. Whatever you're really good at, go find those people that are specializing in that field and are out there putting out that material and just set up an RSS feed for it and read it.
I actually find on YouTube, I love watching the videos from the Game Developer Conference, GDC. They put up the videos up on the vault up there of past talks. And like, even if you're not a game developer, the topics are usually like general enough that it can apply to whatever it is you're doing. And a lot of them are just really interesting.
Yeah. Outside of that, maybe the other way to learn is from people.
I mean, yes.
Right? I'm from a very small town.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a huge web scene here because there just isn't a lot of technology-driven business here. But whether you're in a big city, small town, whatever, usually you can find, you know, a group that you can sit down and talk with. And if it's not in person, you know, a Facebook group.
Check meetup.com. We have Ithaca's not a very big town, but we have a very lively, there's a lot of web developers here. We have a very lively web development meetup group that's got probably 20 to 30 members.
Oh, wow.
But I mean, even if you had 3 to 5 people, that's awesome. And everybody could just be interested in it. You don't have to all be experts. Just that cross-pollination of ideas and like challenging one another to do things, that will go a long way with helping you on your journey.
Yeah. And it's a great way, not only that, but it helps you find out what other people are looking for.
Yeah.
You know, what may be in demand in your area,
mm-hmm.
you know, from a job standpoint. I also think of web development very much like trade work.
Yeah.
You know, your plumbers and electricians, like there's a very sort of apprentice journeyman kind of thinking
Definitely.
To it.
Definitely.
And also because like, it's there, of course, you can go to college and learn web development or a variation thereof or such, but most people don't. If they do, they get like a design degree or they get like a computer science degree, but usually it's more generalized like that. But anybody can become a web developer, and we'll talk here in a little bit about, you know, what we look for when hiring.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to have a fancy sheet of paper. You have to work your butt off and maybe find somebody to apprentice to, for lack of a better term. I think, and I love that way of thinking about it.
That's probably the most accurate way to look at it, I would say.
Yeah.
There's just stuff that you have to put the time in, because you can't have that knowledge transfer from someone telling you it alone. You have to actually like do it and learn the stuff, and that takes time.
And that's a message I'm going to send out to all of our seasoned folks that are listening to the show, is don't be afraid to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And I have sat in on, whether it's been Facebook groups or Reddit or whatever, and I'm guilty of it as well. Yeah. I fully admit that I get snarky sometimes with people asking silly questions, and it happens. But I think we do have to very consciously make that effort. And HR uses much more friendly terms. You know, we have junior developers, you know, right. and senior developers and all that. But the thinking is still very much the same there.
It's the apprentice, journeyman, master, like, model. Like, that's junior, like, entry-level, junior, senior. Yeah.
And that's all you need to be successful is to kind of follow that track, you know? You just put in the time and learn the skills and work with the people. And you can rise through that track just as easily as somebody who spent 4 years, you know, getting at, you know, they went to Full Sail and got their fancy bachelor's degree and did all this design work. Well, you don't need that. It helps, you know, it certainly can open doors for you, but you can open your own doors in this field.
Those structured curriculums do exactly the same thing. They give you like apprenticeship with someone who is more skilled with it and can tell you like, do these things, don't do these things. Okay, that looks good. That doesn't look good. Keep going. It gives you the same kind of like pedagogy that you would get in if you were learning on the job or from other more experienced developers. It's structured and it's time limited. So,
yeah,
not knocking it. It's just you don't need it.
Well, coming up after the break, we're going to come back and we're going to talk to you a little bit about just what you should be thinking about learning as somebody coming into the field. How you know, show people that you have those skills when it comes time to get a job, and then how you just maintain that process as you get older and do more throughout your career. So we're going to go refill our glasses, you go refill yours, and we'll see you back here in about 30 seconds. The Drunken UX Podcast is made possible by our friends at Gasmark 8. Gasmark 8 is a web hosting firm with data centers in New York, San Francisco, London, and Frankfurt. Customers of Gasmark 8 enjoy free SSL certificates, sites that are served over HTTP 2, and the experience of owners who designed a service around the needs of their customers. Listeners of the Drunken UX Podcast can enjoy service for $10 a month. Just sign up at gasmark8.com/drunk. That's gasmark, the number 8.com/drunk. And thanks for sticking with us. I am your host, Michael Feenan. You could follow me on Twitter if you're so inclined. I am at Feenan, and with me this evening is my co-host, Aaron Hill. He is
Hello.
Aaron M. Hill.
That is correct.
That's Aaron. Aaron. You made the mistake of saying that, and now it's going to stick.
I done messed up.
So, getting back to the nitty-gritty here, we've talked about where to go to learn stuff and, you know, what kind of resources to look for and what the market looks like. And I think we need to spend at least a little bit of time talking about what to learn, right?
Definitely.
What to focus on. And I think this starts at any basic level. And this is true. I don't care if you're a designer. I don't care if you're a content person.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever you are, I think you always start with the Holy Trinity. You learn HTML, you learn CSS, you learn JavaScript.
Yes.
To a usable level, not an expert level, but you need to know what you're looking at when you see it.
Yes. 100%.
I mean, if you are relatively competent at this work, you can learn all three of those in a couple days.
Yeah. You don't need to be a master. You just need to be able to understand how it works, be able to write it, even if you're using a reference card or something. And you will, over time, develop mastery in it. I guarantee. You will learn things constantly. But
yeah, you don't need to learn, how to do 3D transformations and...
Flexbox.
Yeah, and things in CSS or whatever. You don't need to be an expert with, jQuery and Angular or anything like that in JavaScript. Just get a functional understanding of it. And that's easy. There are more resources for that stuff than you'll ever know what to do with.
Just learn how to make an HTML document, what the tags mean, the most commonly used tags. And then with CSS, how do you do selectors? How do you apply styling? How do you do positioning on the page? And JavaScript is just learn jQuery. there's a bunch of different things you could do with it. Just learn jQuery. That's a good starting point. You can pick up the rest later.
And the reason that I say that you start with that Holy Trinity, even if you want to be a designer, for instance, is there's nothing worse than working in this field and being handed, as a developer, being handed a design that was created by somebody who doesn't know how a site gets written from a coding standpoint.
Yes.
And so they design things that
are not possible.
I can make it be a thing, but I don't want to.
Yeah, it's actually that's a really good point. If you are a designer, you should have an appreciation for what the code, how it will be coded, more or less. And if you're a programmer, you should have an appreciation for how things would be designed.
Yeah.
That's definitely, you don't have to be have mastery or be able to make it on the other side, but you should be able to have an appreciation for it.
Well, and the reverse side of that is, developers that haven't taken any time to learn any user experience stuff.
Yeah.
And so they don't understand necessarily why something was planned the way it was.
That's every time I use anything made by Microsoft, I'm like, do they even do they even understand the UX stuff?
The classic example is the product developer who puts the on button right next to the off button. The classic example is the seat ejection button in the jet, right next to the throttle or whatever. That's bad design. That's not the way you should do it. But it makes sense to the person who's doing the engineering because they don't care about what the user is thinking. They're just making functionality.
And this is something that is definitely talked about in Donald Norman's The Design of Everyday Things from 1988.
Yeah.
He specifically talks about stuff one example, I just went really quick. Doors on buildings. If a door goes inwards, it should not have a handle. It should have a bar that you push on. If a door pulls outwards, it should have a handle that you grab and not a bar that you push.
Yeah.
It's super simple. The design of the thing should suggest how you interact with it, and it should prevent you from doing something that uses it if it's not intended to be used that way.
That cross-pollination of ideas, though, regardless of the component, because, again, for the most part, while you may work somewhere at some point that you're the only web person, and you may be doing all the petty tech work and IT support and all that as well, if you're trying to grow and move somewhere, you are eventually going to end up on a team where you are one person who is working with many. And you that cross-pollination of principles and ideas and understanding why user experience is important and why design matters and, you know, what accessibility even is and things like that, and universal design and HTML5 semantics and all of this stuff, it matters because it makes everybody's job a little easier when you all are considering what you have to do.
Yes. To that end, these are, so we were talking earlier about going on Reddit and other places and snarking people. I use Quora, Quora.com, quite a bit. And these are, I actually answer questions about being a web developer every once in a while. These are the things, these are like the big high points that I think, once you've got the Holy Trinity down, we're in a back-end language, take your pick, JavaScript, PHP, Rails, .NET, whatever you like. Learn database interaction, like some kind of SQL-based language, MySQL, MariaDB, Postgres, Microsoft SQL Server, whatever. Learn basic web security. Really, like, all you have to learn is what SQL injection are, or SQL injection and cross-site scripting and cross-site request forgery, CSRF. Learn those three things and how they work and how you not make them happen. Learn basic DevOps. How can you, like, if you have a basic VPS or a server, can you make your website live and accessible from the public? And then basic user experience and accessibility stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you should have an exposure to all of these things.
And it sounds like a lot, because it is a lot.
Yeah. You can get a job before you know all these.
But, and yeah, you don't have to know these on day one. This is just sort of the build, you know, build towards it, and take, you know, a couple days a month and sit down with one of these options. Also think about tools.
Yeah.
Git. I don't care what you do. Git is good to know, because even if you're not doing coding, maybe you're helping with documentation and the documentation is stored in Git.
Yes.
GitHub specifically, a lot of folks, and I'm one of them, we're using GitHub for issue tracking and project management now. They've added support for that. If you're a designer or UI person, getting into Adobe XD or InVision. Mm-hmm. And I know that, especially like if you're talking about Adobe or InVision, you got to pay money to get those applications. So maybe you don't. Go watch some YouTube tutorials on it, at least, and see how the application works and how people are using it, because you are very likely to land at a company where those are the tools being used, because those are the tools everybody's using.
If you are a student, you might have access to discounted subscriptions to Adobe software. Usually it's either free or significantly cheaper, depending on how large your university is.
I think if you're a student, I think it's either $9.99 or $19.99 a month, but you get the whole Creative Studio suite, like all of it.
That's the industry standard. If you're going to design, you have to learn it. Yes.
Yeah. I would also tell people to learn convention. You know, we talk about, like you just said, you know, go learn a back-end language of some kind. The trick is, at least the way I explain it, is if you understand the concept of a conditional statement, an if statement, or a for loop, you know, every language, if you go from Python to Ruby to PHP to Java, like, they're all going to write that if statement a little differently. But learning the syntax is relatively simple and quick.
Yes.
As long as you understand those conventions that are behind them and driving them, it means when you look at it, you can understand what's happening.
Right.
And you can sort of decipher and distill, even if you can't write the code from scratch. That gives you that jumping off point. And most languages share many of those conventions. Variable scoping, classes and objects. Learning like basic object-oriented programming, whether that's for JavaScript or PHP, and people are going to raise a stink with me about saying that, but PHP has objects.
It's gotten Java better.
It's gotten much better. But those are principles that will carry over, because objects again, instantiating them and defining them, yeah, it'll be a little different. But they are absolutely doing the same things. And so you'll understand what's happening when you look at it. So focus on learning those conventions.
Almost every language has a switch statement. Every language has an if statement. Most languages have some kind of looping. Like, these control structures and things are universal across languages. There's a link, I won't read it because we're already running long, but from a Quora response that I made to someone who was complaining about having to learn Pascal in high school because they wanted to do web dev. And the crux of my response was like, Pascal will teach you stuff that you will need regardless of what language you choose to use later. And it's good for teaching that. So yes, there's all kind of transferable knowledge for all these things.
And if worse comes to worse, just start a project.
Definitely.
Do something. That's how I got started. That's how Aaron got started. Mm-hmm. We just decided we were young. We wanted to geek around. And so we made a website.
Yep.
And I brute forced my way through it. you know, in 1996, there was not a litany of resources out there for how to write HTML. So I really had to kind of scrounge my way through it. But that process, that act of learning by doing is so useful. Yeah. And honestly, there are some, like, you know, Tour of Heroes?
No.
It's the Angular tutorial that they have. Like, if you go to their website to learn Angular, they have this process called the Tour of Heroes that teaches you how to use Angular. And I actually got incredibly frustrated with it because it was so canned that it didn't spend enough time explaining, like, the whys and the reasons.
Okay.
It was just kind of walking you through steps, and some of the steps didn't even work right at the time. Like, there was contradictory instructions, and I got angry. Like, I got angry at Angular. I have never been quite as angry except when I tried to learn Flash.
Oh, God. One thing about what you were saying, like, learning a project, one thing that it helps you do is it gives you it gives you realistic and real world problems to solve. I think, like, every freaking Rails tutorial, you're making either Twitter or a to-do list. It's one or the other. Every Rails tutorial does this. Whatever. But there are, like, real world concerns with any language that you have to deal with. And having a project on your own, like, you both have those opportunities for learning created, and also you care about them because you want to finish this project. So,
you need to organize your recipes.
Mm-hmm.
Write yourself a tool to organize your recipes.
Yep.
You don't have to release it. It doesn't have to be something you make available. It can just be yours. That's completely all right. It teaches you how to go get that information. Mm-hmm. There are so many resources out there now. It teaches you a little bit about how you search, you know, to get answers to your questions, what resources you can trust, how to figure out a good answer from a bad answer. You know, when you start reading through enough Stack Overflow questions, you eventually realize that a lot of the answers are garbage, but you can figure out why. And that intellectual process that takes place when you start doing that, that's as useful as actually being able to write the code sometimes.
Yeah.
Here's what you do. If you need a project, you don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. In episode 4, we were talking about restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Go find yourself a local restaurant, a small little mom and pop, you know, place that has a diner, and work out a deal with them.
Yep.
Offer to help them make a restaurant website in exchange for some food.
That is a great idea. Yeah.
If it's not them, it's another local business. If it's not a business, if you're young and you're getting started, when you're young, everybody knows somebody in a band.
Mm-hmm.
Help them set up their own band website.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Find a nonprofit to work for. You have an animal shelter. You have, you know, a homeless shelter for overnights. A food pantry. Go offer to sit down and help them, and just let them know you're learning and you're looking for somebody to help so that you can improve your skills. And they'll be more than happy to work with you on that.
Even if they already have a website or they already have someone maintaining it, if it's a topic or a site that interests you, like, ask if you can help out with it and if you can contribute to it in some way. Like, I would think that most If I was maintaining a website and someone wanted to help out maintaining it because they wanted to learn, I would almost certainly say yes.
Yeah. I hate saying like the phrase, give away your work.
Yeah.
I don't want to tell people to work for free, but that is kind of what we're saying is
when you're going to get started, learning, yeah,
you need to get that foundation, and that takes a little bit of your time. And
you
your
can
effort.
Either you can pay someone else to teach you, which is like, you know, going to a boot camp or a college or whatever, or you can give someone else work and not be paid for it to learn, with the understanding that they understand that you aren't, that you're also learning.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
I mean, either way, there's a cost involved.
Yeah.
This way, at least you can feel like you're coming out with something that's yours.
Right, right. You're spending your time instead of spending your money. That's basically what it is.
And know when to stop doing that. Know when it is time to say, yeah, I can do that, but let's talk Cheetos.
Right.
And this lends into the next kind of topic, which, you know, we want to talk a little bit about, you know, how you prove that you can do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I've hired folks and interviewed and stuff in the past to bring on people, one of the things I tell folks, or I've taught courses, there's a university here, I've gone and talked to some of their graphics programs before. I emphasize, you know, to me, a degree is important. Having a degree is valuable because it tells me as an employer that you can commit to something for 4 years.
Sure.
And that's valuable to know that. Yeah. I don't care what that degree is in. I once hired somebody who had a music degree.
I did too at my previous job. Yeah. She was, I saw videos of her playing. I think it was either viola or cello. I think it was cello. She was amazing.
I graduated with emphasis in theater.
Yeah. My degree is in chemistry and informatics.
So don't let that, you know, what you're studying stop you, because that's not what it's about. It's about knowing that you know how to learn, especially in our field where constantly learning and keeping up is incredibly important. So you need a nimble brain, so to speak, and something that can absorb.
I have found that I do some art on the side for fun, and I've found that my artistic practice has helped my programming in ways that might not be obvious. It's a process thing. And I think the stuff we were talking about before the break, you know, this is it's kind of a renaissance thing. Like there's a lot of diverse, different skills that kind of interwork with one another. And if you can draw from those, a variety of experience, it's really going to help you be a better web developer.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The other side of this too is the degree tells me what you're capable of, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I also want to see what you can do.
Yeah.
And that's where we mentioned GitHub earlier and learning how Git works. GitHub, and what's funny to me is I've talked to developers in the past who don't have a clue how to do a portfolio.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I don't need you to hand me a notebook.
Right.
I need you to give me your GitHub link. And yeah. I can go see the code you've written.
Ideally, you have commits to other people's projects that have been accepted. If not that, then you have your own projects that you're maintaining. And if not that, then you have your code somewhere where we can see it.
Yeah. GitLab, Bitbucket, whatever.
Yeah.
But any of that. And you could make a repo. Make a repo that is your portfolio. And you don't have to have all of it there. Pick the code samples that you're particularly proud of. Hell, I'm wrapping up work right now at my job on a form rendering system to feed our marketing automation platform. And I am pleased as shit with myself on the tool that I wrote and the flexibility it has and its ability. The thing that I was thrilled with, I wrapped up the first part of the work yesterday.
Yeah,
I took my code, I put it on a page, and I went to take a look at it, see what I needed to do next. And when I looked at the page, it fucking worked. Like, it was exactly the way it was supposed to be. And I was shocked out of my mind that I'd pulled that off, because I never do that. You always you forget a semicolon or a quote mark somewhere or something stupid, or you left part of a query out or whatever the case may be. Like, there's always something. And it, I just nailed it. I'm so happy.
If you can give back to the community in some way, that's an even bigger bonus. Like, if you're a Rails person, like, write a gem. If you're a WordPress person, write a plugin or a theme. If you're a design person, make an HTML5 theme that could be used by other people. What's the GitHub for designers?
Dribbble,
right?
Dribbble and Behance.
Behance,
yeah. yeah, there are resources for whatever you want to do at that point.
Yeah. Get something out there, though, that shows you can do the thing. That's, like, I don't care if you have a degree. Like, if you have a master's of engineering in computer science or something like that, that says to me, like, okay, I should consider you, but, like, I want to see what you've made. Like, I want to see what you've done.
My portfolio is what got me hired, not my education. Yeah. And I readily know and admit that when I interviewed for my very first web job, I walked in with a portfolio of work of the designs I'd done, the sites I'd created and built and maintained. And the Star Trek site was not in that list. but I will have you know, a band website absolutely was.
That's awesome.
I had a radio station layout that never actually went live. Like, they didn't end up, I don't even know, like, I think the radio station went out of business, actually, now that I think about it. But I did the layout for it. So I still stuck that in my portfolio, even though it never became a real site, because it still showed what I could produce. That matters more than anything. And in terms of showing what you can do and talking about degrees, one thing I will tell, especially people who are just starting out, I would stay away from certification programs.
Yeah, don't do it.
I honestly don't know if there's any good certification programs I would really go after, because most of them are just money grabs.
Not for web development, at least.
Yeah, you've got, I was looking a while back, I was thinking about WordPress certification, but they Automattic doesn't offer it.
Yeah.
And there's like two companies that do, but they're just companies. Like, they aren't anybody.
I think if Automattic did, that might be worth something, because they created WordPress, but I don't know that I would take it from anywhere else.
Yeah, there's a whole debate in that community over that. But yeah, I think about that a lot, and I think about ways, you know, to kind of demonstrate your value. And it kind of comes back to what we were saying, is that at the end of the day, if there's so many free resources, and if you're paying somebody to put a stamp on you, you're almost as well off going out and making your own stamp, so to speak.
I will say I've done a boot camp. I did a week-long boot camp for Rails initially, and it was helpful. I don't think I was like shovel ready after the boot camp, but it definitely helped me like know how to ask the questions I needed to. But some that are like 3 month long boot camps, and I've seen the people that come out of those, and they're pretty competent and they make good stuff. So I think the short term, 3 to 6 month long boot camps are good and will get you like shovel ready.
They give you something to put in your portfolio.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, they give you the time though. Like they cram in. You might get like a year's worth of experience in 3 to 6 months, and that's the value there. It's not the certification that you've got the rubber stamp. It's you're getting that time in a concentrated period.
There are a couple certifications that I will just kind of toss out there, like AWS certification. AWS powers so much web infrastructure.
Yeah.
And it is Amazon itself offering it. Like, it is the people who do it who are offering it.
Yeah.
It's worth looking into.
That's DevOps, but like, there are jobs totally in DevOps. They pay well, and like, it's good work. So yes, that's...
And it's 100% not something I would recommend to somebody starting out. Like, that is you are a seasoned professional looking to expand yourself. Because, like, I've looked at the AWS certification. I've got a buddy taking it right now, and it's gnarly. Like, that it is not, it reminds me of, like, Cisco. If you've ever seen, like, what you have to do to get a CCNA or CCIE certification, that's, it's not a cakewalk. Like, it is almost as much work as trying to get a degree.
If you If you have a background in networking or sys administration or anything, and you're wanting to pivot into doing DevOps, like AWS certs is definitely a good path to go through. But yeah, I agree. I wouldn't start out with that. You're going to get super discouraged.
There is one free certification that I do think is beneficial, at least to a web person, and it's as good for somebody starting out as not, and that's the Google Analytics IQ certification. They used to charge for it.
Okay,
it's free now. Huh. Yeah, it is a free certification now. You just go online and sign up and take the test online. It'll get you a good functional understanding of Google Analytics, which, you know, if you're doing UI UX work, if you're doing web development of any kind, knowing how to read analytics is important and useful.
If you get an analytics job, just be prepared for pointy-haired bosses to yell at you about why your traffic is so bad. And be responsible, and you're going to be held responsible for that. But there are jobs in that for sure. And
if it still costs money, I wouldn't recommend somebody starting out. Mm-hmm. But since it is free, it's totally worth taking your time and going through it, because it is good and they've got a lot of good learning material for it.
That's something, if you had that kind of training and you wanted to, like, you know, test out your knowledge, do the restaurant thing, do the band website. You know, that's something you could, if you wanted to try it out in the real world and you wanted to do it pro bono once or twice, like, go for it. You know, I don't think everybody understands the value of good analytics, but, like, that can really, kind of level up your web experience if you have a website.
Yeah. Once you've got going,
mm-hmm.
and now we kind of turn the microphone towards some of our more professional seasoned developer and designer listeners, but you still have to stay sharp and you have to keep your skill set up. Whether that's, you know, a lot of it, you know, for me, going to conferences,
mm-hmm.
getting together with people is a huge part of that.
Yeah.
One that comes to mind immediately, WordCamp.
Mm-hmm.
WordCamp is everywhere.
That's for WordPress.
I'm going to one next month, as a matter of fact, up in Kansas City. They're cheap. It's a good chance to sit down and see what other people are doing, to talk about. And that is a WordPress-specific conference, but it's a very easy access kind of event.
There is a I've been doing a conference. This is my fourth year of the five total. It's been around Ruby for Good. We meet in the DC area every year. We get together. It's cheap. It's like $300, $250 or something. And we do, it's like a 4-day long conference. We all work on open source projects for nonprofits. And I've been a team lead the last 2 years. It'll be my third year.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to speak at conferences. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've been doing it a while, that's a good challenge for yourself. And it forces you to make sure that your game is sharp and that you're, you know that you know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not right for everybody, but it is a good opportunity, and a lot of conferences love giving people a chance, you know, if they're not a routine speaker.
Yeah.
Outside of that, writing your own stuff.
Yep.
Even if it's just once in a while. I've got a blog on my personal site. I mean, it's probably been almost a year since I've written an article on it.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing stuff like this now. But
how would you make a podcast?
Writing your own blog is good for the same reason that speaking is good. It forces you to think about what you're doing, to do some research, to compare your work to other people. It's a good exercise that kind of keeps your brain limber, you know?
Yeah.
I
have a blog as well, and my philosophy with my blog has been, anytime I have to go digging or do research and I can't find the answer on Stack Overflow or someone else's blog or on a forum somewhere, if I've had to do research and synthesize some information into something, then I make the blog post that other people might find. And those are usually the ones that get me the most traffic. And if nothing else, like, I'm giving something of value back to the community. And that's an important thing to do.
Yeah. If you're writing enough too, it also forces you to read constantly.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned, you know, at the start of the show, talking about books and stuff to do. That doesn't stop once you've learned something. Like, you have to always, not necessarily books, whether it's blogs, you know, news aggregators, whatever the case may be, read constantly. One of the things I mentioned earlier, like, latching on to a few of the professionals in your field of expertise and, you know, follow them on Twitter, see what they're talking about, see what they're sharing. If you're doing that on something like Twitter and you're reading that and keeping up with it,
yeah,
you'll start to discover that, like, good resources for new technology will find you. You don't necessarily have to go out hunting to figure out what you don't know. One of the good ones that came up here in the last couple of years for me was, like, Flexbox Froggy.
What? Wait, so Flexbox is that new CSS technology, right?
Yeah, so Flexbox is the CSS3 stuff that lets you do, you know, much so more powerful positioning within divs and alignment.
Yeah.
And it's literally, it's a tutorial system that teaches you Flexbox by making you move frogs around the pond onto lily pads.
I love it.
But it's fantastic. It really gets those concepts of how Flexbox works across to you.
Yeah.
And it was a great way for me to grow that part of my CSS knowledge that I otherwise wouldn't have probably gotten into until I had to actually do something. Like,
yeah.
I saw the resource, I was like, what the hell is this? And I went and checked it out, and I started doing it, and I went through the training material.
That's awesome.
Those things will find you. And so write, read, and follow.
Yeah.
That's all. I mean, there's not a lot more you can do outside of that, but those are the really important pieces.
Which gets to kind of the next point of just, if you are a web developer, there is never a point where you can say, like, well, I've learned the web development, and you never have to learn anything new again. It's like teaching. Like, you constantly have to be, like, leveling up and learning new things. And, you know, all the points that we mentioned earlier, like all the areas, like, you can always learn to be better in any one of those, and being better in those other areas will make you better in the other areas.
Yeah.
And
unfortunately, web development isn't accounting.
Yeah.
Our field is not mature. Our field is in constant motion.
I went to college for accounting also.
I mean, one day, it's like this, right? One day you wake up in web development and everybody's making fun of you because you're still using Flash and you don't know why they're laughing at you. Or you're still trying to design a website in tables.
Oh, my God.
If we want to put this in today's terms, you wake up one day and everybody's like, why the hell are you still using jQuery?
Right.
Oh. I mean, time will come, and you're going to sit there and realize something passed you by, and you don't know why.
Yeah.
And it is frustrating, and it does mean, you know, that you have to do more work than other fields, but it's also incredibly rewarding. And there are tools, right? We mentioned all those learning sites that you can go to mm-hmm. learn the skills to get you started. You don't have to not use those just because you've been doing web development for a long time.
Right.
I've been looking at Angular. I haven't used Angular for a lot of projects yet, and I want to get, you know, better at it and functional at it. So I've gone back to looking at, you know, Code Academy Udemy, I think, is one of the other ones.
Yeah,
I have. And looking at the Angular programs they've got to learn that stuff. There's nothing that says you can't do that.
I've got to learn React for my current job. We've got a couple sites that are in React. I have a Udemy course that I bought on sale for React Native, which is really, that's awesome technology right there. I've been using RSpec with Rails for 5 or 6 years. I'm good with it. Like, I'm very competent with RSpec, but I picked up 2 weeks ago, I picked up effective testing with RSpec 3 because there's stuff in it that I just haven't learned yet. And this is helping me get better at it. You have to constantly throw yourself back in and keep learning things.
Yeah. And you mentioned this a little bit, and I'll build on it just a hair. If you've been doing web development long enough, or design, or, you know, this applies across the board. I keep saying web development, but I'm trying to be, I mean that inclusively. Go set yourself up an EC2 instance on AWS. Go get a DigitalOcean account and set up a Droplet. Set up your own system and learn. You'd mentioned, you know, basic security.
Yeah.
Figure out how to set up a site and secure it and set it up. Have your own development environment where you can test things and go in and try to break stuff or whatever. Challenge a friend. Odds are, if you do web development, you've got a friend who does web development.
Mm-hmm.
Set up a website and be like, hey, try to break into this.
Yeah.
Give them permission. Please give them permission. Don't do it without asking.
if you do an AWS, just this is a caveat here, contact AWS. There is a resource for telling them you are attempting to do a pen testing, and that you're expecting suspicious activity. You can get an authorization code for that, and it will be for a known period of time. You probably want to do that so that there aren't problems.
pen testing, for everybody else, that's penetration testing.
Right, hacking.
It's just hacking, basically. Yeah. But yeah, set yourself up, and that's something like I've been doing the last probably 3-4 years a lot more, is I don't use HostGator anymore. I don't use Bluehost or any of those. Like, I don't rely on other places managed hosting of any kind. I do my own hosting now.
Yeah.
And I absolutely don't recommend you do that for other people if you haven't figured it out. Like, that's not something, a service you sell if you aren't confident in it. But it is an incredibly valuable skill set to learn. Because, again, I have to talk to DevOps people pretty regularly.
Yeah.
And the way our load balancer works has direct impacts on the way my websites work. So I need to be able to talk to them about those configuration options and, you know, things like that. So there's a lot of value in learning that real... It takes you from being somebody who likes pretty cars to being somebody who knows how the motor in it actually works.
Yeah. One thing you'll notice if you do maintain your own site is that for whatever reason, your site will be up there maybe a week and you'll already start getting hammered by Chinese and Russian IPs with people trying to SSH into your site. So this is a freebie for everyone. Fail to ban. Fail numeral 2 ban. Learn how to install and set that up. That will lock down IPs that are attempting to break into your site.
Something else to think about, if you aren't necessarily like a self-teacher, like you're not good at just learning skills on your own, there are other podcasts. We're, of course, a very small podcast right now.
For now.
We encourage you all to share the show if you enjoy listening to Aaron and I. But there are other shows, some of them much, much bigger than us. There's the UX podcast. Mm-hmm. There's Syntax. There's Shop Talk. Shop Talk is Chris Coyer's podcast. All of them are very, very good, very top-notch, well-produced shows. We'll have links to all of them so you can find them if you haven't checked them out yet. Mm-hmm. There are other web development podcasts. They talk about everything from, you know, SEO to AMP to Angular and Ruby. I mean, they cover a huge gamut of topics.
Yeah.
Sometimes in much more, you know, maybe mechanical detail than, you know, the way we approach things. And that's fine. Find what works for you. But those podcasts are out there. Those are a great way to keep up to date, if nothing else. Because sometimes it's not necessarily about knowing everything all the time. I work with a couple guys that blow my mind at how much they know. And I work my butt off and I can't figure out how they stay informed the way they do. But this is a good way to pick up on the terms that you think you do need to pay attention to.
Yeah.
If nothing else, you hear an episode on some new technology and it's like, that sounds pretty adjacent to what I'm doing. And it gives you that opportunity to decide for yourself if you want to go learn more about it.
Yeah, you definitely can't stagnate. If you do land a gig somewhere and you're getting paid, there's a good possibility that job won't create or encourage opportunities to learn things that are outside of the needs of that job. And it's nothing against them, but you have to kind of create those opportunities for yourself. And you have to, like you were saying earlier, push yourself out of that comfort zone, learn new things that are unrelated to what you need to know, so that you can get that cross-pollination of ideas.
This, I said earlier that, you know, web development isn't accounting. Accountants get to, you know, leave the office and leave their work on their machine and not think about it all night.
Yeah.
I don't have that luxury. Right. You know, I come home and I work on this podcast. I do research for my own articles and writing. Yeah. I look at conferences that I plan to speak at. I'm reading, you know, my news feeds to keep up with stuff. Like, it is nonstop. And I don't say that to intimidate people. Like, I happen to really enjoy that routine and that energy that comes with that. And it, you know, there's a lot of opportunity then to figure out what you want to do that you enjoy, whether that's, you know, find an open source project that you can build on. You know,
definitely.
go There, believe me, there are no shortages of open source projects looking for people to help commit and test and all that.
Every October, GitHub sponsors, it's called Hacktober, H-A-C-K-T-O-B-E-R. And you are to participate in this, you make 3 commits to open source projects. They have a list. There will be issues that you can grab. You just assign one of those to yourself, handle it, submit a pull request. These are all things. If this sounds like Greek to you, you'll learn it. You'll learn what this means. You get 3 accepted pull requests, and then they send you a t-shirt. It's a fun thing where you can contribute to other open source projects.
I didn't know that, and now I want that t-shirt.
I have one of those t-shirts, and it's awesome.
And again, this applies not just to coders.
Yeah.
Projects need interfaces. They need graphics. Like, they need copy written for pages and mm-hmm. all that. So this definitely, while it sounds, you know, the terms we're using might sound very rooted in the coding piece of it, this absolutely applies across the board.
Yeah.
Go get involved, you know, especially for those of you who have been doing development for a while, you use tools. Go get involved in the user communities for those tools and help out.
Yeah.
Oracle's got their user support forums where the more active you are helping out other users, you know, people can upvote your answers and score you very much mm-hmm. like other platforms.
Internet points.
And you get, yeah, you get brownie points with Oracle as, you know, a top user kind of thing. And I don't know if they give you anything or not because I am not a top user, but they do it. Go answer questions for folks. You got the 2 big platforms, right? Stack Overflow and Quora.
Yep. I do Quora a lot. That is there's a lot of different questions about a lot of different things, and it's nice to just share your expertise.
Yeah. Go out and just get engaged with people and help them out and see what they're wondering about, because again, their questions may key you into something that you're mm-hmm. missing, or that you know that you haven't thought about integrating 2 things or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
I want to close though on a topic that I think is incredibly important in our field because it is so big and so broad and there's so much going on. And that's whether or not you're starting out or you've been here a while, mm-hmm. the feeling of what's called imposter syndrome.
Yeah, that's for real.
So, and if you haven't heard this term before, it basically means that you don't feel like you deserve the credit that you are either getting or mm-hmm. that you know, you aren't as good as the people who are working with you or that you see doing similar things.
It's assuming that everyone else has everything figured out and that you're just right. faking it and that you're going to be discovered someday for being a fake.
That one day you got asked a question and you had to go Google the answer because you right. didn't know what the code needed to look like.
Or you looked at Stack Overflow for a solution. Like, none of us have ever done that every day, yeah. ever.
let me say this very clearly and very plainly. That's okay.
Yeah.
That is so, so, so okay.
There is no end. There is no point you will ever reach where you are like, I've got all the answers, and no one else is there either. Even like Kent Beck, I saw him do the keynote at RailsConf 2 years ago, and he's awesome. He's so entertaining. But he was saying that he was talking with a friend of his that was a contractor, and he built like all these buildings. They're driving around looking at him, and he's like, well, you know, like if you can send messages on Facebook, like I wrote something that makes sure that the messages get to where they're going, and I think they're still using it. Like, it doesn't matter how far you've made it or how far someone else has made it. Like, there are everybody's still learning, everybody's still working and hustling.
And it's easy to look at all the folks that, you know, are big and think, man, I will never be those people. You know, whether that's folks like, you know, Jared Spool, Christopher mm-hmm. Schmidt, Chris Coyer, you know, these guys that, you know, Luke Rabluski, you know, all these big names that are out there kicking ass, speaking at all these conferences, writing all their books. They represent an incredibly microscopic fraction of the people who do web development. Most web developers, most great web developers, you will never hear a word out of because they are too busy being heads down, getting their work done.
Yeah.
And that is so okay.
Yeah.
You know, we mentioned a few things to kind of keep up, you know, and keep on top of your game, like, you know, writing, you know, and or answering questions and all that. And you know what? If you don't want to do that, you don't have to do that. That's not what makes you successful.
Yeah.
Aaron and I have taken on the challenge of producing this podcast every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And we're having fun with it. And, you know, one thing, and here's, let me admit something just plain to everybody. You know, as of this recording, we're 2 episodes behind on our transcript. because that shit is time consuming and hard.
Yeah.
And we're the ones doing it. And I feel terrible that I'm behind, but I'm also not going to let that stop me.
Yeah,
we're going to keep producing the show, and we will get that caught up.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to feel bad when I look at the other podcasts and see everything they're doing. And in fact, I've looked at a couple recently, and they don't even do transcripts at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, hell, we're ahead of the game. We're doing great. You know, I speak at conferences. Aaron speaks at conferences.
Mm-hmm.
We put ourselves out there, but you don't have to stick your neck out like that. That's not what makes you a good web developer, a good designer. That's not the case. And
you can choose however you want to give back to the community, whether it's speaking at conferences or writing gems or writing blog posts, whatever. You should give something back eventually because you have expertise and you will know more than other people at some point. And it's good to help those other people get up so they can become part of those 1 million jobs in 2020, right? Like, we got to fill those jobs somehow. And so if you can help other people get in on the game to help fill those jobs, that'd be great.
It makes me think of, there's a quote about Facebook, and I don't remember who originally wrote it, but I can't remember the exact wording of it, but it basically comes down to, you know, this statement of, you know, people feel, you know, why the reason why Facebook makes people feel miserable is because they're judging their life against everybody else's best moments that they're seeing.
Yeah.
That's kind of what this whole thing about imposter syndrome is
yes.
that you can't sit there and judge your success or ability as a designer or developer or anything against.
Yeah.
Only the success that you see from everybody else. That's, I think, the
wherever you are in your journey, that's where you are. And it doesn't matter fuck all where anyone else is, and all you can do is like, what can I learn today? And if your trend is to constantly be learning new things and exposing yourself to new things, that's what matters. Don't stagnate, don't stop learning, don't think that you've learned everything you need to know, because you haven't. And even if you have, there will be more things tomorrow.
Fucking A.
There's a lot of alcohol in my drink, Michael.
This episode of the Drunken UX Podcast is brought to you by Gasmark 8. Look, web hosting is not sexy, it's just something that's kind of there. You pay every month to the big hosting company that secretly owns all the smaller hosting companies, and you get slow speeds, oversold servers, and terrible support. But the reality is, the couple extra seconds it takes for your website to load could mean lost customers or clients. Less customers equals less money. Where do you go if you want super fast, reliable, and affordable web hosting and you don't really want to babysit a Linux server 24/7? Gasmark 8. Their hosting environment is built for speed and security. All SSD storage? Check. Blazing fast WordPress? Check. Free SSL certificates for all domains if you don't already have one? Check. Data centers on both US coasts, the UK, and mainland Europe? Yes, yes, yes. Gasmark 8 was started by an American, Mike Rachwalski, and a Brit, Adam Palin, two higher ed veterans who met at a conference and started a company making WordPress websites. As more clients complained about their web hosting, Mike and Adam thought over a couple of ciders at the pub that there's got to be a better way. So they built one, and now dozens of small businesses, developers, and nonprofits trust Gasmark 8 with hosting their websites. If you run a web development or creative agency, Gasmark 8 has a great reseller program you can use to upsell their fast and secure hosting to your clients. As a special for listeners of the Drunken UX podcast, Gasmark 8 is offering this limited time special. You can get all the features of their super fast platform for just $10 a month. Just go to gasmark8.com/drunk to sign up. That's gasmark8.com/drunk.
Thanks for listening to this week of the Drunken UX podcast. We hope you enjoyed and found this useful. It was a little longer than normal, but it's an important topic. I think you'd agree.
That's okay. Yeah. We'll see in the numbers how long people listen. How long are you willing to put up with us talking? If you want to check us out, be sure to run by our website, drunkenux.com. Remember, if you have learning materials that you particularly have found useful in your career, want to share with people, or books that you have read, or podcasts that you listen to, go by the website, go to the show notes, and leave a comment and share that, and we'll be sure to make sure that that gets shared out to everybody else. We are on Twitter and Facebook at /DrunkenUX. I'm at Feenan on Twitter. Aaron is at Aaron M. Hill. Thanks again for listening, everybody. We look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks. Tune in on Wednesday. We will be back with a new episode of Real Time Overview, where we review the latest web topics and news from the past week. And until next time, keep your personas close and your users closer.